From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
Late in the season, when all else in the flower garden is losing its head, dahlias are coming on strong and having their moment. The 52nd annual American Dahlia Society National Show just took place at Longwood Gardens in Pennsylvania. But we'll hear about that and the best of the breed and how to grow and store dahlia tubers. But first, this message.
Underwriting support from Timber Press, your go-to resource for books in gardening and nature. Whether you're a new gardener, a professional at the top of your field, or a reader interested in the wonders of the natural world, their books are there to help you grow. TimberPress.com.
Longwood Gardens senior horticulturist and dahlia expert Roger Davis was heavily involved in bringing the national show to Longwood in late September, and he's here today to talk all things dahlia, from ribbon-winning varieties to cultural tips for best performance and even timely ones for off-season storage of those tubers. So welcome, Roger. I'm so glad to talk dahlias with you. Everyone's excited about them right now.
Yes, it's the time of the year for the dahlias.
It is. Boy, whew. And they show off, don't they?
Yes, definitely.
Did you have a big turnout for the show? It seems like the dahlia shows really do well, even the local ones.
Yes, on Saturday we had over 11,000 guests in the garden.
Oh, jeez. That must be crazy. The parking lot must be a madhouse.
Definitely.
And so Longwood is really no newcomer to the growing of dahlias. It's not like you just did this show and this is a first-time thing. This is a long tradition at Longwood, isn't it?
Correct. Yes. Even Pierre, we have records that he planted dahlias on Flower Garden Walk when he first started planting. And so each year in September, we have the local show. The Greater Philadelphia Dahlia Society always hosts a show here at Longwood each September. Mm-hmm. But this year was special because it was the national show.
Mm-hmm. I love that you say Pierre as if he's your friend. I mean, Pierre S. DuPont, whose estate this was, yes, Longwood was, back in the day.
Yes, definitely.
And how long ago is he? Was that like in the first quarter or so of the 20th century, I think? Did he have dahlias there?
In the 40s and early 50s.
Oh, okay, later, a little later than I thought. Oh, uh-huh. Mm-hmm. So they've been planted in various ways and places on the property there, both when it was a private place and as a public garden. Where do you use them now, these days?
Right now we're using them predominantly on the Flower Garden Walk, mixed in with all the other summer annuals, as well, highly used in the Idea Garden as well. For this year, we wanted to highlight the dahlias because of the national show.
Right.
So we planted 12 large beds full of dahlias with a number of seedlings, and then we also mixed them in with some summer annuals just to show people how you can mix them into a flower garden. You don't have to have them all segregated out in your garden.
Mm-hmm. And so, like, what other kinds of things, just for sort of a visual in our mind's eye, what other kinds of things worked well with them and on the walk, at summer annuals, I mean?
Right. Anything that kind of mimics those flowers as well. Like, mm-hmm. you can't go wrong with a salvia during the summer.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, Salvia leucantha is looking wonderful. It's mm-hmm. kind of a late summer blooming salvia. So those work really well. We have everything from zinnias as well to geraniums.
Mm-hmm.
Grasses look really good with dahlias. Sometimes dahlias can have ugly bottoms where the foliage isn't as nice.
Yeah.
So anything that's kind of can dress down the front really works well.
And in this area, is this an area, the Flower Garden Walk, that also has a spring moment, or is it something that's like from summer through freeze?
Yes. During the spring, that's the location where there are over 100,000 tulips planted.
Oh, my goodness. That's a lot.
So this is a changing, evolving garden mm-hmm. all year. The goal is to have as much color there as possible.
Mm-hmm. So you also plant them in trial gardens, the dahlias?
Correct. In the Idea Garden, we have an area called the Trial Garden. And so we like to experiment. Each year is a little bit different. And this year was kind of, using plant combinations with dahlias incorporated so that people could see how they at home could incorporate dahlias.
Oh.
I think a lot of people have the idea that dahlias have to be segregated out for, you know, showing exhibition, but they can be mixed in and done tastefully so that they kind of blend in with other things, because they don't, they kind of really start showing off by September. Mm-hmm. Early in the season, they're a little more quiet.
Mm-hmm. And we're saying dahlias. So far, you and I both use the word dahlias sort of generically, but this is a genus of plants that, I mean, you know, I don't know as well as you do all of the technical, you know, the sort of categories and sizes and flower shape descriptions, but for me, they're from little buttons to as big as a child's head. Those would be my categories. You know what I mean? I mean, they're drastic,
yeah.
Right? So tell us a little bit about sort of the range of things. Of
sure.
Yeah.
Right now, there are 21 flower forms that are recognized by the American Dahlia Society.
Oh, my goodness.
And they range, like you were saying, from the little small pom-poms.
Yeah.
All the way up to the formal decorative, the cactus, semi-cactus. There's also a form that's called orchid, which is a star-shaped flower.
Oh.
And then there's the anemone-type flower form that has like a pincushion center.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a wide variety, and I think that's one of the things that our guests really take away from the exhibit is the just diversity of flower shapes, because you don't always see all the other interesting flower shapes around.
Yeah, the water lily is another one I saw in some of the, like, Instagram pictures and stuff like that. There were...
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, water lily. And it really is that it really is distinctive, you know, so a dahlia isn't a dahlia isn't a dahlia. They're not all the same by any means.
Exactly. And you just never really know. You have to do a little bit of research to kind of see what the plant is going to do, because sometimes the smallest blooms can be on the tallest plants. And vice versa. Sometimes the large blooms can be on short. So the flower size and shape doesn't really dictate the size of the plant.
Okay. So what kind of winners? There's the Court of Honor, where you kind of line up the ribbon winners, I think. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. And
yes,
so, like,
definitely.
What? So all these people came and they saw these. I'm thinking, from having been to other shows, there's the competitors came and brought a cut dahlia in a regulation vase or jar of some kind, and those are all put out on tables in classes or something, and then the judging happens. Tell us a little bit about what goes on before we get to the winners.
Yes, correct. Well, we had folks come from all over the country. We even had some folks come in from Canada, and they brought small blooms in their suitcase and water vials. So that is true dahlia dedication.
It is.
And so, yes, everyone brings their blooms, and then we spend pretty much an entire evening and morning staging the blooms, which is basically primping them and getting them prepared to go into the vases, and then everything is numbered and labeled with the varieties and the name of the person who brought it,
mm-hmm.
And then they go out to the show floor where they're then judged, and the different groups are judged together, so all of the double A's, the dinner plates, all of those are judged together, and then the winner of that section then goes to the Court of Honor.
Okay, okay. And so on and so forth through all the different groups.
Exactly.
And so is there anything to, like, infer when you looked at sort of like what got the ribbons? Is there anything to infer about what's hot in dahlias? Or is this about like a well-grown specimen that's true to type or something? Or does this ever have a trendiness to it?
Right.
You know what I mean, in terms of color or whatever?
Yes, there are definite, a lot of the Dahlia Society growers, a lot of the gentlemen really like to see, you know, just how big they can get the double A's, you know, whether they can get a 13, 14-inch flower.
Oh, my.
Some of the dahlia growers aren't as interested in the smaller ones.
Yeah.
But then the folks that came from Canada had some beautiful little small ones, and they won awards as well with the small ones.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone has their kind of different preferences and tastes.
Right.
But really, it comes down to, when they're judging, it comes down to flower form.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can get that perfect flower form that that cultivar is supposed to exhibit,
I see. Okay.
That's what the judges are looking for.
I see. So now, on the other hand, in, say, your trial gardens, you're trying different things, and as you said, you're sort of looking to provide inspiration for home gardeners, combining them with things, making suggestions, so to speak, by what you plant. So do you pick up sometimes on, ooh, there's these new varieties or there's new colors? Or like I've seen, for instance, some bicolors, like, on, again, on like Instagram and other social media, like a la mode. Is that a variety? Do you know what I mean by
that? Yes, that is, yeah.
Yeah, and it's got like these white-tipped, are they petals? I mean, is that, you know, it's dramatic.
Right.
They're dramatic. Or are there things like that, or are there that you say, ooh, we've got to try those, or everybody's into orange this year, or, you know, is there any kind of trends? Because, for instance, as a gardener and someone who likes to use plants in gardens more than, I don't have a trial garden, or even a cutting garden. You know, what excited me most in the last 10 or 20 years about dahlias was when the ones with dark colored foliage, like the Bishop of Llandaff, I might have just mispronounced that, but, you know, the ones that came from the UK that had the dark foliage and kind of orangey red flowers, they were good because they always look good in the bed even before they bloomed because of that dark colored foliage. It was dramatic, right? That was,
yes.
Yeah. So
those are definitely very popular, yes.
Oh, they are? They continue to be sort of the offspring?
Yes, definitely. I love the dark foliage dahlias. Those are definitely, like you're saying, have a presence in the garden even before they start blooming.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say another thing that people are really interested in right now is cut flower dahlias for weddings.
Oh.
And there's one called Café au Lait that's kind of a creamy white with a little blush of pink to it.
Uh-huh.
And it's not necessarily what you would consider an exhibition-style dahlia. You don't technically see them at the shows a whole lot, but they're very popular out in the industry, and every florist is looking for them.
Huh. Interesting. Café au Lait. Okay. Now I'm going to have to go look that up when I get home.
Sounds good.
So wherever we're growing them, how to grow them, you know, you are an expert plants person and grower, and you're growing in a very, you know, refined environment where it's got to be right. So you're trying to do everything just right. So what's the protocol, like, from the beginning of the season to, then we can talk about storage later, but like, where do we begin if we want to do well with dahlias?
Well, to be honest with dahlias, I think the most challenging part is remembering that these plants have hollow stems and they definitely need support. So staking is the major thing to take into consideration. One way you can get around that a little bit is if you choose more dwarf, shorter varieties that don't require as much heavy-duty staking, but anything that's over 3 to 4 feet, oftentimes some dahlias get up 5 to 6 feet tall, you need some really strong either bamboo or metal rebar stakes to be able to tie up these beautiful plants, or those late season storms will come through and knock them over and damage them.
And is it important to put those supports, even though there's nothing showing maybe, or very little showing above ground early on, is it important to put the stake in right away so we don't pierce anything, or what?
Exactly. You have it exactly right. You definitely want to go in first with your stake and then plant your tuber next to that, or your plant next to it, just so you don't pierce that one tuber and damage the plant.
And how deep below the ground? Do you start them indoors in pots first, or in trays first, to get them a head start and then transplant, or what do you do at Longwood?
Yes, we are fortunate here to have greenhouse space to be able to start them ahead of time.
Yeah.
That also allows us to know every tuber, even every at home, anytime I plant tubers, I'll plant 10. There's at least one or two that probably aren't going to do well.
Mm-hmm.
Every year, that's kind of the case. So when you plant them ahead of time, you can see which ones are the strong ones and plant those, as opposed to having to find out a month later, this one's probably not going to turn into much.
Right. And of course, it's always the one you put in the most prominent spot.
Exactly. Because with the tubers, there could be rot starting on the inside of that tuber, but it still feels firm and okay. But then as you see it start to grow, you're like, something's not right. It's too stunted.
So I might then, I'm in a colder zone, even I'm in a 5B compared to you, but say I decided I had a space, maybe under lights or a bright spot in a shed or something with a skylight or whatever, where I was maybe propagating other things, seedlings and stuff early, and I decided to put some dahlia tubers in, would I put them like in a gallon pot, or what would I do with some potting soil, and how deep, and what would I do if I wanted to do that?
Yes, you could pot them up. It doesn't need to be a large container because by the time you're going to plant them out, you don't want them to be too far along.
Okay.
You want them to still be fairly small.
Okay.
And you also are going to be very careful not to overwater them. If the potting mix already has moisture to it when you plant them or pot them up, as most does, it's probably going to have enough moisture. If you do a lot of watering early on, you'll rot the tuber.
Okay. Oh, that's a really good point, because I think a lot of times we think, oh, I've got to really douse that. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like we're watering in seeds in the garden outside, because we want to really – seeds need that. But with these tubers, we don't want to use that same idea.
Right. The general rule in the garden is when you plant something, you water it. But that's not true with dahlias. If you plant a tuber directly in the ground, there's enough moisture already there for it to get started. You don't need to water it.
Okay. And I forget if you said how deep, how far below the soil surface am I going with these?
You just want the crown, the eye of the tuber that's at the end to be an inch underneath the soil
is
fine.
Okay, so not too deep.
If you have really good draining soil, like sandier soil, like on the West Coast, you can plant it deeper, and it'll stay cooler, which is good for them. But here in Pennsylvania, we have clay, and if you plant it deep in the clay, it will rot on you.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of times I will even mound my soil up a little bit and make rows in my garden and then plant them in the mound. I can always add more water, but I can't take it away from the tuber once it starts to rot.
Right. And are we either direct planting the tubers outside around the frost-free date or just before, or is there a timeline?
I always wait. My personal preference, everyone does it a little bit different.
Sure.
But my personal preference is after the frost-free date.
Okay.
And I'm not in any hurry, because really once the soil temperature warms up, the plants will start growing. If you put it into cold ground, it's going to sit there until the temperature gets high enough. So there's no real rush. If you have your tuber in before the 1st of June, you're fine.
Okay. So then the thing that I think that we gardeners, a lot of us want to skip, and this is true with a lot of plants, is we don't want to pinch. We don't want to, you know, kind of do any cutting back, any.
Right.
And so tell us about that, because these are plants that could benefit from that, because they branch more, I think, if you give them a nip in the bud occasionally.
Definitely. Once your plant comes up out of the ground and has started, really about three or four leaves, once it puts on three or four sets of leaves, you're going to want to top the plant, which is basically just pinching out the growing tip out of the center, and that's going to encourage the plant to branch low to the ground.
Okay.
And you will get multiple branches that will then grow up, and you'll be able to then tie to your stake to support for the blooms. If you just leave the plant to its own devices, it's going to go straight up and set a flower right at the top, and then it's going to branch way up high.
Right.
So it's going to be very tall, and the chance of that main stem breaking is very great.
Mm-hmm.
So it's better to get that weight, keep the weight, center of gravity down low on the plant, because they get so top heavy.
Okay. So I have to remember that. I have to be courageous and do it, because again, you know, it's growing so beautifully, you don't want to headed back, you know. But
exactly.
Yeah, but it's good. It's good. A little.
It definitely. Yeah. It's definitely the right thing to do.
Yeah.
And then even when the plant is growing, a lot of people for use in vases at home or for showing will often disbud, which means you're taking off some of the side buds. Typically on a stem, buds are set in sets of five. So the terminal flower bud is going to be the largest.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you pinch the two sets out underneath that, more energy goes to that main flower.
Okay.
And it also will make the flower present over the foliage as opposed to the side shoots growing and covering up that bloom.
Right, right, okay.
Some varieties just have a tendency for the plant to outgrow the blooms, and so then all the blooms are tucked down.
Right, they're hidden, right. So in the last 2-3 minutes, I just want some tips because, you know, in the Northeast where I am, before long it's going to be time for aftercare, you know, if I want to store my tubers. And so when do I do that? What's the signal? When do I dig? What are ideal storage conditions?
So it's fine to allow your dahlias to be killed back by the frost. It's actually really good for them. So after the first heavy frost, you can cut the tops off of the tubers, cut the plant back to the ground, and then you want to make sure that your name label goes with that root mass, that you leave it on the stake or you leave it attached to the portion that you left so that you don't lose the name of that variety.
Sure.
And then you can use like a digging fork, and you want to make sure that you stay away from, like 8 inches away from where the stem came out of the ground.
Yes.
So that you don't pierce through the tubers and kind of lightly dig that piece up. There's a lot of different people who store them differently, but I store my tubers as one big clump.
Yes.
And then I put them into like a bulb crate, a slitted plastic crate that has some ventilation. And I don't knock the soil off of mine because a lot of them have those thin necks.
Yes.
And so if you break, if that tuber then bends and breaks and is detached from the crown of the plant, then you lose that portion. So I leave it kind of all intact. And then I pack it with mulch around to keep it kind of tucked in there so it doesn't dry out.
Okay.
Overwintering tubers, the catch is you don't want it to be too wet and you don't want it to be too dry. You want to kind of be right in the middle. And you want a location that's going to be cool but not freezing.
Okay.
And you don't want it to be too warm. So oftentimes people's basements are a little too warm.
Yes.
So the tubers typically dry out and shrivel up.
Okay. And so we're talking about what temperature, like 40-something or 50 or 40?
Yes, like 40 is perfect if you can do that.
Okay.
A root cellar is perfect, but not everyone has that ability to have a root cellar. But I keep mine in my garage that's attached to the house. And then if we do have cold night temperatures that are down into the single digits, then I'll bring them inside into the basement for a couple days until the temperature moderates, and then I'll put them back out in the garage.
And then we start over again with those expert tips. Roger Davis, I'm so happy to speak to you, and congratulations on what sounds like a wild success of a show for the
Thank you so much.
Yeah, national show. It's good talking to you. I'll talk to you again soon, I hope.
Underwriting support from Timber Press, your go-to resource for books in gardening and nature. Whether you're a new gardener, a professional at the top of your field, or a reader interested in the wonders of the natural world, their books are there to help you grow. TimberPress.com.
And it's great talking to all of you again, too. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version on Stitcher or iTunes. Find me anytime at awaytogarden.com or as awaytogarden at Facebook or Instagram. And happy gardening meantime.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.